Aloha! I was like, why in the heck you do that? Well, you can tell where I went this summer. It was awesome. It's a lot better than just saying, hey there, how y'all doing? Which that's what they say down south. I used to live here. Welcome to all of you. Like I said, the fact that you're here and not at Mark Rabinovitch's session, I'm happy. So you must be about Linux. So let's make sure you're in the right place. This is BRK3268, the Cert Exam Prep for Linux Foundation Certified System Administrator. That's a mouthful, LFCS. What the heck are we doing teaching this at a Microsoft convention? We just did this summer at our internal convention. And actually, just after this session is the Microsoft Loves OSS and Linux session. So if you haven't seen that, you might want to check that out for you guys who are deep in it. But it's a first-class citizen in Azure. The numbers they gave here, I'd actually had heard larger numbers. I've heard is up as high as up to two-thirds. I think it's really in the marketplace mainly, up to about two-thirds of all machines in the marketplace are Linux. And that's mainly in ARM, the newer templates. Across the board, we're like a 20-30% Linux machine, so it's quite a bit. But welcome to my session. My name is Mark Grimes. I'm with Microsoft Consulting Services, MCS, and I'm part of the Center for Solutions Incubation Team, which is our new name internally. And basically, my role at Microsoft, I've been here 6 years. Here's my About Me slide with Mickey and Hoi. So I'm from Southeast Michigan, the only state you can do this and this. So I live here down in Southeast Michigan. You never say I'm from Detroit, right? I'm from just outside of Detroit. Married 20 years, three kids and a dog. I've been a trainer, professional trainer. I can't do it full-time, obviously, because I'm a consultant now, but I did 10 years. That was my life, starting from NT4.0 all the way up through 2003, PMP IDOL business classes. So I have a lot of training background experience, and that's why I do these at Ignite and also internally. I'm a big TechNet blogger, so I'm over, and I don't know about you guys, but I'm over creating and reading 200-page documents. That's what I used to have to do in my deliveries even 5 years ago. And people would dread reading them and this and that. So I thought, I'm just going to take this stuff that the customer needs and I'm going to blog about it. If there is an opportunity or gap, I blog about it. So my blog is real simple. I put it in small, and I made another blog, which is in there, bigger, but it's really easy, aka.ms/markgrimes. Almost anything and everything I'm doing with my Azure customer, I update. I didn't put my shortcuts, so if any of you are interested in Azure, there's one that I have. It's in there, but it's actually simple. It's aka.ms/azure/shortcuts. And basically, what I've done is I found out that when I'm drilling down the Azure site, I hit you search for something, you get the videos. I want the videos. I want the about everything about that thing. So I found those pages for over 200 things, and it all starts with aka.ms/azure/something, DNS, NSG, UDR, you name it, and those are shortcuts. So I have that in there. Related to this session and also the other two sessions which I've delivered, yesterday I delivered the Azure Prep for Architecting Azure Solutions, the 70-5 34, and also the Implementing Infrastructure Azure Solutions, which is a 70-533 exam. I uploaded those slide decks on that Ignite Cert Prep link that I made last night. And likewise, this deck, which is your tool to help you prepare. I put a lot of time in these decks. These decks, I spend way more time than doing a regular breakout session. The reason why, I put a lot of tips and tricks. I put a lot of resources. I put hyperlinks in it. In this one, I'm not going to get into a machine, but I will show you I have lots of command line samples about how to do things. Okay? So first thing, for the people that are here, I want to do a quick survey to find out where we're at and to make sure you're in the right place or not. Hopefully, you are for this exam. But how many people would say you're relatively new to Linux? Okay, well, we got one hand. Okay. Okay. So I'm taking the rest of you are in mid-range or you've been doing, we like Linux and been here. Okay. So let's just set the stage here just so you understand. This is really designed toward the newer people. It's an entry-level exam. So for those of you who've been out there, have been doing it day in, day out, I welcome your comments and feedback. I don't have a lot of time for questions because I have a lot of content. I just basically have to structure this out, let you know what you need to know to pass the exam. And basically, you're doing a mental checklist as I go through this. You go, yeah, I know that. And oh, this thing I don't, SE Linux, never done that before, right? Or AppArmor, never done that before. So those little things will help you to kind of get that extra a little bit. But I equate this, I'm a hardcore, old school NT administrator, right? So that initial for, yay, woo. So that first exam in the MCSE program, I hardly studied at all. I went in, aced it. It was no brainer. So for those of you that are hardcore Linux, you could probably walk in here, but what we'll do hopefully to help you guys out, the rest of you folks, is to find those little gaps and little tips and tricks. And by all means, if you got a tip or trick that I don't have up here that I didn't know about, because I don't know everything, please just blur it out and say, hey, here's another way to do this or find it, and we all can learn from each other. Does that sound like a good deal? All right, I like it. Also, when I do updates to my blogs for this and other things, I always tweet them. So my Twitter is hashtag Mark B. Grimes. Someone else stole Mark Grimes, so I had to put my middle initial in there. So the session objectives and takeaways. This is the way that I do certification sessions. Bottom line is you need to know what the exam objectives are. So I get those, I break them down. Then I start building the slide deck based on those session parts of the domains. Then I start going through those and looking through. And now this one, it's really interesting. When you go to the Linux Foundation, they have kind of like an initial list, which are kind of like the 80-20 rule. You know, there's the bulk of stuff you'll most likely run into the exam. But then somewhere there's like a list, and here's the rest of the stuff. And it's like 3 or 4 pages of things. So I'm going with kind of the 80-20 rule. These are the bulks of the things that you need to know about. And from that, I built this. I put in some tips and tricks, have lots of little command line stuff, and I'll show you here in a second. What I've done to really enhance this deck, kind of a new approach I've never even done with any of the Microsoft certification, to make this deck your learning tool. And by the way, as soon as I get done with this presentation, I will go sit myself down somewhere and I will upload this and you will be able to get it at aka.ms/ Ignite Cert Prep? Yeah. So it will be there. You'll want to grab it and use it. And of course, if you get some basic fundamentals, but those of you who have been doing this, you probably know most of these things. Again, we're just looking for the gaps and trying to give you that 3 to 5 point advantage. That's what I find out most people that don't pass an exam, they're usually pretty close. Even if you've been doing something for a while, you're usually pretty close. So this is my new thing that I've done for the deck. So you see in the upper right-hand corner, I have this little command prompt icon. So also, this deck has a lot of animations. So when you get this deck, go in full screen mode. So you can kind of test yourself. So there'll be a question, which I'll go through these, and then it will click on it, it will give you the answers to them, right? If you're newer and you're just studying, you can do it not in full screen mode, then you'll see the questions and answers all together. But I want to show this, how this works. It's very simple. These are all hyperlinks. So this little button is a hyperlink. So if I'm here, I click on that, and this is the supplemental commands that match to it, and I'll have examples I'll show you as we go through this. And you click back on the PowerPoint icon, and it takes you back to that slide where you were and continue on. Okay? So even since I did this at our internal convention at Microsoft this summer, this morning and yesterday, I thought, well, I still update. You know, every time I do this, I get a little better and add some more resources for you. So I actually added some things I think that particularly for those you've been around might help out that you may or may not have done. So lots of animations in here. Anything else here? Also, I have some, I wouldn't call them hidden slides, but we always have to constrain, because right now I'm looking at 65 minutes and 94 slides. I can't get through 94 slides. The actual content for the presentation is probably about 50 to 60 slides, so about a minute a slide. So I'm not going to spend a lot of time in these things. Just here it is. Here's what you need to know. Let's break it down, right? And then you either go, yeah, I got it, or no, I need to go and play with it. Okay, so that's that. Why is the, mouse is over there, sorry. Oh, click there. All right, also, unlike the Microsoft certification exams, I need to spend more time here than I normally do. Microsoft exams have been around for a long time. We've been teaching them for a long time. We used to give a whole big overview. We don't do that anymore because you can Microsoft.com/learning. This is something new we're presenting, so I'm going to spend a little more time just giving you a little heads up if you haven't dove into the exam facts. unlike a Microsoft certification, and I think this is pretty cool, and actually I would like to see Microsoft kind of go in this direction as well. This is all about you getting in a window and doing it, okay? It's simply, and it's from a Chrome browser. So Chrome's the recommended browser to use. Yeah, so you want to do it. It's all performance-based. So they're gonna give you scenarios or questions, and either you're gonna have to do something based on, we want you to do this, X, Y, Z. You go in and do it, and you can pick whatever flavor of Linux, and we'll share that with you in a second, whatever flavor of Linux you want. You get three choices. But it's all about performance task-based, and I'll talk more about that in a little bit. How long is it? It takes about 2 hours. This is not something you generally do at a testing center. It's on your own PC. I'll cover more about that as well. Any supported browser, but they recommend Chrome. So here's the distros. You get you can choose between CentOS, OpenSUSE, or Ubuntu. And you choose that when you select to register for the exam. And if before you take the exam, if you go, oh no, I really want to do Ubuntu, you can change it. But once you go and take that exam, that's what's going to load up. So, you know, different distros sometimes may have different tools, so whatever you're most familiar with. So we try to cover in here kind of the general tools that are most used scenarios. For my distro, I chose CentOS because that's what we're seeing a lot of internally and a lot of the people I work with use. So I chose that as my option. Anyone from Brazil? No? Okay. So it's languages are supported in English, Spanish, and Portuguese. So I didn't take this out. I apologize. You don't get a free voucher for this. Internally at Microsoft, we get vouchers for the exams, but so you'll have to. But I think even if you pay for the exam, they have a free retake, so which is really cool. So here's the thing I tell, for particularly the bulk of you guys who've been doing this for a while, I tell everyone on an exam, particularly when you have a free retake, just take it. I am not legally allowed to tell you anything about what is on exam or how it works. I could lose my certifications if I did that. But if you go in and fail, guess what? You now know what's in there. Just take it. Just do it, as Nike says, right? So go ahead and take that, and then you got a whole year for a retake on it. Also, they have combo deals on that, so that's kind of tied to the voucher. I think it's open publicly as well. I don't know if anyone's looked. I didn't look recently, I apologize. But typically, they bundle together the voucher for the exam, and then also they have this online course. There's an LFCS 101, which you can get for free, and I have all the stuff linked at the end of my deck. There's an LFCS 201, which gets more deep. The 101 is very, very level. I mean, it's like, you know, basic DOS command type stuff, you know, that type of stuff, very simple. The 201 gets a little bit better, and also I put in links in here for you as well. The exam results you do not get instantly, so it's within 72, 75, it's kind of an odd number, by email and in the portal. And the certificate expires in 24 months, so you have to renew by a retake. So this is kind of like the Cisco exams, right? You have to redo those, or 16 hours of continuing education. So that part, if you're out there doing that, you know, I did that with PMP for a long time. You take it, and then you just have to justify, here's what I've been doing in the real world, and will you bless this? And they typically will, if it's something substantial, which I'm sure you're doing. Oh, there we go. So this is, right here, the reason why we brought this to Ignite, as well as internally, is now it's tied together with a Microsoft certification. This has never really been done before, with the exception of network. They did Network Plus was tied in a long time ago with MCSE, that I recall. So if you take and pass the Azure Implementing Infrastructure Solutions exam, the 70-533, and again, that deck is live on my blog, so you can grab that and get all those cheat sheets and notes in there. Then you take and pass the LFCS, you now will get an MCSA Linux on Azure certification if you like those things and care about them. But usually the people you work for do, definitely. At Microsoft, we encourage this. In fact, we're required to take exams now. They got away from that, but now they're saying, we want everyone to have a base level knowledge. So I think it's a good thing. And there's a link there also for more information on that. This is pretty cool. How many of you have Pluralsight? Access to Pluralsight. So internally, we get it. I tell you, if your company doesn't provide it, I think it's worth, I don't think it's that much, it's probably a couple hundred dollars. It is amazing. They've brought in so many different things. But actually, this is from my Plural site, and they have a lot on here. So pretty much, I think it's covering, yeah, right there, that's the exam objectives. So there's about several hours of content on here. The guy's really good too. So he's very thorough, goes through demonstrations, breaks it all down. The only difference is here I'm gonna do it in an hour. That will take you many, many, many hours. But here's the good thing is, so if you sit here for an hour and you go, okay, I got this, but this one I'm not so good at, I would then, if you have this subscription, go into there and pick, like for example, virtualization management. And then you could spend, a couple hours in that and deep dive. That would be really, really good. I haven't compared, I don't know. What write-up are you talking about? Oh, so the Linux on Azure, that's the Microsoft certified thing where you get the 70-533 and LFCS, right? That's what that's referring to. So testing location policy, you do this on your laptop. I don't know if any of you have ever taken these exams where you do them at your home, but I've heard some stories from people, even in the Microsoft certification, you can't do anything funny. They're gonna take you over your webcam, they're gonna take control of your machine so they can see what you're doing, they can see what's going on in the console. You can't open other windows, you can't have anything pretty much around. You need to have all the space cleared as much as possible. No smartphones, no smartwatches. Keep away from public spaces, no one else should be in the room. They don't want you doing the exam and then going like that, because you could be talking to someone and trying to get answers. So it's very, very important that you have a nice, quiet, I mean, I'd recommend almost like a hotel room or a conference room that you get into, very clear space, because sometimes they'll make you hold up your machine and turn it around so you can see what's going on. And a friend of mine, real high-level architect at Microsoft, he did one of these at-home exams, and something bleeped or something. They're like, oh, you're trying to cheat. And they like closed the exam and he was done. He couldn't go back for like several weeks. So just make it as copacetic and cool and non-obstructed as possible. Here's another list. This is all from the Linux Foundation. Forbidden items. You can't open external web pages, text-based email clients. Browsing with tools such as VM or Emacs. Other people can't be in the room. Other devices, notepads, external manuals. But you can use man pages. Okay. So anything, that's pretty cool. I used to do Novell exams. And in Novell, that was part of the exam, is how you could actually use the help files to get answers. So this is great. So if there's something you're a little rusty on, you can actually pull up those man pages and do it. But copy and paste, not supported. And you only get a single terminal console at one time that you can open up. So I did some screenshots of when I set mine up. So you log into the My Portal at the Linux Foundation. You click the schedule exam link, you type in your initials, and then once you take the exam, you log in, you click the take exam link, which these are links on the right-hand side. So before you do everything, you gotta make sure you've registered, you check your system requirements, you get the candidate handbook. I think I have that one linked at the end. Verify name and important tips. I want to ask that question too, so I know Jason's over. Anyone else here from Microsoft? Okay, so at Microsoft, people, I have a couple other resources. One, we also did this at Tech Ready. So there's another recording where we actually have some demonstrations on there. One of our consultants did it. And also, there's a Yammer LFCS site, over 300 people. So if you just go to Yammer and type LFCS internally at Microsoft, lots of dialogue and lots of resources going on. So, and that's a good thing to do too at your companies, whether you use Yammer or whatever you use for social networks. I've been doing this a lot. I do it for the internal Azure certifications. And my Azure certification, we actually have over 3,000 people collaborating on sharing tips and tricks and stuff like that. It's really useful. And that's just showing the distribution options that you go in and you can go in and modify them and change them later on. So as you mentioned, there's no virtual machine needed. So this is where you do the browser check. And the only gotcha, they said, you need to make sure you enable third-party cookies, have good bandwidth, and again, you have a little compatibility checker that you can do on that. You also have to have your ID, and you're going to show that to the webcam to make sure you are who you say you are. Okay. All right, so this is the breakdown of the exam, which we already saw in the Pluralsight window. And this is really kind of indicative of where I'm going to spend my time. And again, for those who've been around, bear with me. It's going to be very fundamental, but we're just covering what's in there. The bulk of the exam really is kind of the first two or three things. Essential commands, very simple stuff, right? But it's, you know, can you combine these and put them together and do what you need to do to get the answers that they're asking for? So that's 1/4 of the exam right there, just essential commands and being kind of fluent with them. User and group management, again, it's like basic AD management, users, groups, rights, permissions, you know, all that sort of stuff. Octal, doing Octal instead of just RWX. Operations of running systems. And then, so that's where I'm going to spend the bulk of my time. The latter part, I did try to pick out a couple things I embellished from what I did over our internal session on the security, and particularly SE Linux and also AppArmor. I added some more special commands. I'm thinking it might be something that some people haven't done as much, so I've added that in here. Networking, again, if you've been doing this for a while, I mean, a lot of these commands are similar. A lot of these commands are very similar to what we already do in PowerShell or Command Prompt in Windows. Virtualization. Virtualization is a very, very small component because essentially if you've ever run Linux on, not that they get into how do I do this in Azure, but if you've ever set up a Linux machine in Azure and had to connect to it, you know, you kind of understand the basics of how to connect to a virtual machine and the secure shell and all that sort of stuff, how that works. So I'm not really going to spend a lot of time on that. And storage management, likewise, very, very small portion that we're going to cover in there. Okay, so let's get started after 15 minutes. So this is just the breakdown. I actually grabbed this right from the Linux Foundation, just showing all the sorts of things that we need to know and understand about what we're doing. Searching for files, very straightforward and simple stuff, right? Unless you haven't done it, then you need to know. What are the options? Comparison of files, inputs, doing backup compression, understanding hard links and soft links, again, stuff that you guys do all the time. Read and use the system documentation. So you have that at your fingertips, and you can load that up and use that whenever it's needed. Managing access to the root account as well. Okay. All right, so searching for files. So one of our favorite utilities, of course, is good old grep. Right? With grep, we can scan through the system and print out whatever lines you want. You can combine this with other utilities to find information. And then also we have find, which is, you know, very useful in searching for things as well. And we have, you know, a couple other things here. Particularly one of the things you want to know with these commands, even though you use them day in, day out, you know, go to the help files and look at the switches, because sometimes those will help you find things that you need to know. Also, you know, we can do wildcard. We'll talk more about bash a little bit later with some scripting options, but you know that you can support wildcards in there, of course, just like with all of our commands. So those are some good things to know. I also want to highlight here, and I did this for Microsoft, and then I thought, well, maybe you guys can't use it, but then I think you can. So this actually took a long time to do, but what I did was I put in, so if you're in the Linux Foundation, the more details about this, if you're not as familiar with those commands, these are actually the chapters and the sections for this. So in this case, this basic stuff is in the 101 course, which that's free, so you can get to that. And then the 201 course would require buying that part, which you can get in I think it's a package deal you can still access. I'm sorry? They have sales a lot, yeah. So I've seen promotions and stuff you can do. All right, so this is, again, just core basic commands. I'm sure you guys use a lot of these quite often. Probably the ones that, you know, for newer folks that you might want to highlight. So you guys help us out here. So probably the ones that, you know, some people may not use as much. I mean, ls, password, pwd, cat, cp, all those sort of things. Sed and awk, what do you guys use those for? Yeah, stream editing, exactly. And we can do a lot of that with awk too. So if you want to do particular manipulation of that and transform the text. You can get very, very sophisticated in doing that. Okay. What about head? Head and tail, what do those do? Yeah, it's exactly kind of what it sounds like, right? You want to get just a certain part of that file, right? So again, being very familiar with these, and we also have some samples of these. The mouse is backward here. So in kind of the not so obvious ones here, I put some examples of, you know, using the cat and actually how the syntax works. So cat, you display files, combine copies, create new ones, the stream editor for sed and awk, and then also how to use the option for tail and head as well. So a lot of these slides, we have these to give you some more information. Okay. All right, so every once in a while, this is kind of an example of the test yourself. So you know, some of the utilities that we can use for viewing files, cat, tack, less, tail, head, update, change, and modify times of files. You can use touch, the make dir, the remove dir. Removing files, you can use the RV, RM commands. And then for renaming and removing directories, the move, the rmdir, and rm as well. Okay. All right, so what do you guys use? What's the tool of your choice when you're gonna edit and manipulate text? What do you guys like? Yeah. VI, Vim. Anyone ever use Vim Tutor? Yes. Yeah, so a lot of people like that. So that's a good little tool that a lot of people aren't as familiar with. So VI and Vim, those are very popular to use, a lot more capabilities versus the basic editors of Nano and gedit. Also, how to compare files using things like diff and diff3, and also the patch command. Okay. Also, with a lot of your basic utilities, just like, you know, it's very, very interesting, you know, when I look at all these things and I'm an old school PowerShell guy, it's like, oh, this is stuff we used to do in PowerShell. You can do the same sort of things. So PowerShell was made by Jeffrey Snover, and what's Jeffrey Snover's background? Unix. So it's got a lot of that background there. So with all these commands, we can do our basic expressions that we can do to match for a single character. We can go, you know, match A or Z, either or the end of a string, or preceding item 0 or more times. So lots of basic expressions you can use to find, you know, whatever it is they're asking for in that exam scenario. Okay. File systems, features, and options. So understanding the basics about disk partitions, you may be asked to create more partitions, right? Understanding the file system types. So again, this exam is not going to really talk about them so much, but it may have you configure these. You know, EXT3 is a little bit older, but you know, a lot of the more modern systems are using the EXT4 and ButterFS. The XFS is also another native file system that's being used across systems. Understanding how to do mount points, something from basic administration we do quite often. We use the mount command, and you select the directory where the file system is going to be attached. Oh, I want to go back to that one because... Again, we have for the recording purpose and everything. So also some examples here of how to use these. And of course, when you make changes, you're going to have to do the sudo command, which is essentially like the run as command in Windows. All right, so some examples are using the fs check and the touch and the reboot and mounting options. And of course, how to get help. So if you get stuck and you need to do the right switch or whatever, you can do a mount-help and get information as well. All right, disk quotas, free usage, and swap. Okay. So what commands do we use for swap? Has anyone done that?
Swap on, swap off.
Swap, yeah, it's kind of like that. It reminds you of that. Swap on, swap off, exactly. So we can use those sorts of commands. We can use make swap, quotas, quota check, quota on, quota off, set quotas. DF and DU, what are those used for? Exactly, disk free and disk utilization. And in that particular case, we have the -HT, which means human readable, and the file type that you can do in there. And also, again, we have some examples for you. So showing how to do a quota check. So the quota check UA would be to update group files for all systems, and some other examples there for you. And of course, with all the commands also, you can always do the -V option if you want to get a lot of verbose information. Pretty standard, and by the name too, standard file system. So we do input, outputs, errors, and of course use our chevrons to input and output files, double chevrons, you know, if you want to append to it as opposed to overwrite. So very simple stuff there. And then we also have the option and the need sometimes to copy and backup files. You know, the CP is for local copies if we want to do a remote copy. So whether we go from one machine to another or across machines, we can use rsync. If we do the dash R, we do recursive copies. And of course, rsync can also be done over SSH. We can also do IO redirection and pipes for the file streams also as well when we're doing this. Oh, so you know, obviously the when you're compressing data, probably the I did the two in the green are probably the most likely that you're going to use gzip and tar that we can use. So again, if you're not familiar with those, you need to make sure you understand how to use those and the syntax to make them work properly. Okay. All right, so you want to change the standard file permissions. So we're going to quiz you a little bit here, some simple basic stuff. But every file associated with the user, who's the owner, and some basic commands. I don't know how you guys say them. I just say them chom, chgroup, and chmod. But there's no formal way you have to say these. So just what they sound like. So change ownership, change the group ownership, and change the modification. And when we're looking down at the bottom here, let me get my little, oh, I got it right here. I can do. So in this case, we have, we can change the user, the group, or the owner. And then, of course, so that we have that as our first triplet. And then for our permissions, we know we have read, write, and execute. So in this example, we've changed the modification. We're doing the user and the owner. Plus means we're adding the execute. And then if you're doing multiple permissions and changes, you can separate them out with commas so you don't have to keep rerunning the command over and over. So in the second one, since we have a minus W, we're doing for the group, we're taking away the write permission to that particular file. So it might be an example of something that you have to do. And also in our little command line window here, we have some other things for changing ownership and how to change the group membership as well.
When changing the permissions, do you have a choice between absolute and symbolic and that symbolic here?
Yeah, so again, whatever you can do in your distro and your window, whatever is available in that, you can do. So there isn't any given right answer or way to do something as long as you get the result that's needed. So if it says we need to change and modify this for this these people and these groups, whatever method will work within your distribution is fine. So that's why we're kind of keeping it generic here as far as what you need to do, but how you do it will depend upon the tools that you use. Right? So absolutely. All right, so we have these numerical systems. I know you guys know this. So what do these numbers have to do? How do they work with the permissions? Right, a lot of people use RWX. So what are these one, we can do one, two, three. Yeah, binary, actually, they refer to it as octal, but it's not really octal per se. But we can actually set our permissions with the numbers, right? And we have some examples here for you. So one equals X, two equals W, four equals R. And then from that point, you start adding them. So 4 plus 1 gives us Rx, Rw, so that would be R, 2 plus 4 gives us 6, and Rwx gives us 7. So here's the next question. So not talking octal, but just the regular permissions, what are the default permissions we have for a file? What did I hear back there?
Depends on the distro.
Depends on the distro, right. Yeah, so that's one thing. But typically, read and write for everyone. And then for the directory, RWX. So again, that's a good point. So you need to be aware of that and know that as you're doing this for the
exam.
Yep, absolutely. And then also, you know, understanding, and you know, if you prefer to do this, I don't think it's a situation that I have to know how to convert these. But you know, if you're better with the octal or binary, you can use those methods as well. So in this case, for everyone, it would be 666. And for the read, write, and execute to be 777, which are the combination of those permissions. Okay. All right, so managing access to the root account, a lot of administrative things, we have to have the sudo, but if I'm building a box from scratch, it's interesting because if you go into Azure and make a Linux machine, sudo is already pretty much set up, right? So I can do that. But in the case where I'm installing something from scratch and I may have to get it enabled. So the basic things, I would use SU, start that, type the password, and then you can also create a configuration file. So knowing where that stuff is located. And that's one of the things I don't think I included here, but in the Linux Foundation certification training. So very important, and I know you guys do this already, but understanding the layout of the directory structures and where you find things. So when they tell you to do something, you need to know not only how to do it, but where to go if you have to modify that configuration file, right? Same thing with the permissions on the file, so where do I go to do that? And of course, all the pseudo-config files, they're stored in the etc sudoers file directory in the etc sudoers directory. What do you guys use? Package managers. What's your favorite one? Apt-get? Yum? Yeah. So that's about the two typical answers. So again, just knowing what tool to use. Yum's probably a little bit more universal. So most distros do that. Red Hat, CentOS, Fedora, apt-get. Very, very popular as well. In fact, most examples that you see out there, they'll be referencing apt-get. But whatever one works. They say you need to install something. Whichever one is at your fingertips, you can use. You got a point? Or? Right, depending on the package that you're doing. Right, so Debian would be a Deb package versus the Red Hat for an RPM. Yeah, and the packages themselves are just like MSI files, right? They were installing and configuring on there. Okay. And there's also Zipper too, but that's mainly SUS, Linux, and OpenSUSE. Okay, so we just kind of did a little summary thing. Very, again, essential commands, as the name applies. Some basic ones that if I was going to put, you know, a little bet on things that you'd most likely know. Changing access permissions to files, groups, things like that. PS for process information. grep, so you're going to have something, you have to search through a file and make changes. Vim, you know, of course, any kind of text editor, whatever you like. But also the Vim Tutor is something, if you're not as proficient in it, is a good little tool to take a look at. And of course, you know, good old sudo that we have to use to run our commands. All right, so that right there is 1/4 of the exam. So feeling good about that part? Yeah, I think so. So here's almost another whole 1/4. So operation of running systems. So doing things, boot, reboot, shut down. Oh, that's pretty straightforward. Here's another thing to note too about a lot of these things. So when you're in that window, you can really use whatever method you want. So if you want to fire up a GUI and that works better for you, you can do that. Or if you're faster and want to do it through the command line interface, you can do that as well. Okay. So really, you have one window. You do it the way that works best for you. But in some cases, you know, it may only work from the command line. So it's pretty much a closed environment, but anything that would be required for that exam will be available, made available. Exactly, yep. All right, so some of these basics we talked about. Other things, scripting. So typically, number one, you know, area you're gonna go into is some bash scripting, which a lot of people do. And the other area that I tried to enhance a little bit in here, how many people have actually used SE Linux or AppArmor? Anyone? Okay, so about half. So that was one I thought, you know, compared to the essential stuff that I know almost everyone does, those things, I put some examples in there how to set and configure that for you as well. Okay. So the boot process, this is just some basic information. And again, on this exam, I'm not going to be asked, you know, what these are, you know, what is grub versus lilo and FE Linux and dasu boot. But you know, the kind of the typical bootloader that we're going to be dealing with and manipulating is going to be the grub, the grand unified bootloader. So there's really not much to that. It's more kind of information stuff. And likewise, I put these in here originally, but you know, using the ps command to deal with processes. So I did put in a couple syntax examples for you. And again, these are kind of just kind of test yourself quiz questions as we talked about. What bash command displays or resets a number of resource limits associated with a process under a shell? Has anyone done that one? Anyone heard of ulimit? It's one of the things you can do, okay. And again, you're not gonna get these questions, but if you have to do that, you would need to know that command, right? So that's the value of it. Two commands to be used to set process priorities. Very good. 100 points for you. Right, nice and re-nice. Is it possible to give niceness? That's a funny way to say it. Is it possible to give niceness to non-super users? What was that? Okay. Yeah, and also you can edit the limits.config file too, conf file. What utility can be used to ascertain, that's a big word, what shared libraries and exe needs? Utility to determine what shared libraries and exe needs. LDD, yep. And also some other things to know, top sleep, and we're gonna talk about at cron and cron tab as well. Some basic things. So this is all about scheduling tasks, right? What are we gonna do? How are we gonna do it? Pretty straightforward stuff. I think it's funny, and I had to check because they finally took it out of the Windows 7. At was there for years. I think they finally took it out of the Windows operating system. So the key thing is to know, depending on what they ask you to do, I mean, they're schedulers, right? That's pretty straightforward stuff. But the key thing is what I put down at the bottom here is if I'm doing at, that's a one-time process. It's done. If we want to do something scheduled over a repeated process, that's what we're going to do cron with, okay? So the cron daemon, just like your task scheduler in Windows, you can add tasks to the cron tab files. Cron tab can automate backups, have other repetitive tasks. At one time, we tell it tomorrow, today. Very simple syntax, very easy to use. Okay. Also, scripting. So I actually found this. I wanted to put a good resource instead of trying to type in a lot of stuff. But I found this earlier this week and put it in there. I found this Bash guide for beginners. So it's really good. So if you're not as fluent in scripting, and again, you don't have to get really deep in here, but just some basic commands to do. So there's a link and a resource for you. Other things to do in the maintenance, manipulation by string, Boolean expressions, extended attributes. Doing your standard looping constructs, for, whiles, do, stuff like that. And also making temporary files with make-temp and touch. Okay. All right, so this is kind of a new part I embellished a little bit here to help you out. So SE Linux was actually originally developed by NASA. So it helps to provide additional level of security from inside the Linux kernel. So it's actually a module that enhances the Linux kernel. And there's three conceptual quantities or qualities about this, I should have said. It uses context, rules, and policies. Also, with SE Linux, you should know the three different modes and how they differ from each other. So you have enforcing, permissive, and disabled. So enforcing is what it sounds like. I make a policy to do something, right? It's going to happen. If I do permissive basically means I have the policy set, but I'm going to allow you to do it anyways, right? I'm not turning it on. I'm not enforcing it. But to do disabled, though, is a little bit more kind of permanent. So I've got some examples of this to show you here. So if we're just an enforcing and permissive, we can actually switch that while the process, while we're running, right? But if I'm going to do disabled, I can set it for disabled while I'm up and running, but it's going to force a restart. I'm going to need a restart to make that happen. Another command we're going to use is get enforce, and I'll show you that. And then let's just show you here. So this is the added new resources I put in here for you. So to see the current mode, if you go in there, so that could be a question. What mode are we in, right? Just got to know it. Get enforce. And if we want to change the mode, we use set enforce, and then it's just those two words. So it's permissive in this case if we're going to change that mode. If we do set enforce 0, that will temporarily disable it until you reboot it. And then at the bottom, and this I thought this was kind of a good one for exam purposes, maybe the scenario says you need to permanently disable SE Linux. So you have to go in and modify the configuration file. I got them here, set SE Linux equals disabled. Or you can do it with a kernel parameter and do SE Linux equals 0 in the etc SE Linux config. And again, when you get these, always hit the little PowerPoint icon that takes you right back where you left off. Okay. See you, Jason. And kind of similar to this, which is another way that we've enhanced the security. And again, these both of the, this follows what they call MAC or mandatory access controls. So AppArmor is just an alternative to it. And I got a little screenshot sample and also some command lines on here. Again, based on profiles, two modes. I love the name of this one. Complain, right? So complain just basically means restrictive mode, okay? To install it, you do sudo apt-get install appArmor-profiles. And here we have some examples syntax for you. So again, there's the installing it. We can do appArmor underscore status to view the current status, aa-complain to place a profile into complain mode, or restrictive mode is what that means. To enforce something, you do aa-enforce mode. You can load a profile in the corner with in the kernel with a parser. And then to disable it, again, you have to go into etc initd. And then also to unload it, you update with that command, -rc-d-f appArmor. Okay. Oh, I was clicking on the thingy again there. Okay. All right, so that, folks, right there is about 40% of the exam, almost, or I guess including this. So that was 20-25%, that was 45%, and then 15%. So we're really getting through the bulk of the stuff here. So user and group management, pretty straightforward stuff. We need users, we need groups, create them, delete them, modify them, modifying environment variables, using templates, configure resource limits, managing user processes with the PS command we already talked about. The configuring PAM, I kind of took it out of here just to save time, but that's the pluggable authentication module. So I actually have the hidden slides are after the end, so those will be in the deck as well. Talks a little bit more about that. But that would be something for the exam if you haven't done it. You'll need to know how to do that, possibly. Okay. All right, so local user accounts. So basic accounts, they're located in the etc passwd. Various aspects or elements of that file that we can change and modify. So the name, the password, the UID, the GID, comment, home directory, and the login shell. And pretty straightforward on the commands that we use. I mean, that's what we need to know here. So the user add, Stefan, whatever, that would just simply create a new user. And we can also override defaults. The root can delete accounts, so user delete, in this case for Isabel, and then also get modification information with the --help. And again, some more examples here, pretty straightforward with the user add, user delete. Oh, I got two delete pops. All right. Yeah, please do. Okay, very good point. Thank you. Right. Very good. Okay. I clicked through the animation again there. Oh, that's a good one to highlight there too, at the very, very bottom there. So if you haven't seen this one as well, utility to modify the etc group. You can also use the Vigor and the VIPW utilities. Okay. And of course, environment profiles, we're all familiar with these, whether it's in Linux or Windows, very typical. Environment variable, just a string, right? We can use by one or more applications. Commands, what do we typically use for environment variables? What command do we use? Oh, do I got it up there? So set, environment, or export. Yep, had it right there. Okay. And again, understanding what the task is. So if you're asked to do something for the exam, and then what would the command be that I'm going to do to set that with? That's the types of things you need to know how to do. Okay. All right, next thing, again, stuff you've probably done quite a bit, networking. So configuring networking, hostname resolution, starting, stopping services, pretty straightforward. Implementing packet filtering, doing firewall settings. I think I have the firewall settings in the after the slide deck, a little bit more in depth there. Stop, start, and check the status of a network service, routing IP traffic, dynamically routing IP traffic, synchronized time using other network peers. And again, the references to the LFS modules for this, the 101 being the free stuff and the 201 being the package deal if you get that when you sign up for the exam. Okay, real simple stuff here, folks, right? So host name, we know what that does. Resolves host name to IP addresses. Localhost, we all know that, the 127.0.0.1, right? And then the commands that we're going to use for DNS resolution, host, NSLookup, whois, and dig. And I actually found this going through all the materials, seeing what was out there. I think it was, what's the hyperlink here? I gotta remember where that's from. I'll try to fix that link. So that there was a DNS chapter. I think it was in one of the things in Linux Foundation. I was like, get a free DNS chapter in this. And so I posted internally at Microsoft. I'll try to remember to do this. But there's a lot of good articles on there about configuring those sort of stuff. But it was a great paper, so I'll try to fix that before I upload this for you. Yeah, so again, it will be dependent upon the distro you choose, you know, what they're going to do. So whatever version you choose, you need to be familiar with that. So oh, and the 7 is different now too. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Great. Thank you. Yeah, so I'll check that. Start, stop, check network services. So there's a whole big list. I wouldn't say anything is game on the exam, but it's a lot of the typical services. So I think what I've seen in the list is DNS, FTP, web servers. Those are kind of the main ones, FTP. It's all network services, right? So what you'd use for that. Yeah.
And now systemd has a whole new architecture.
So
you have to start and coordinate the services.
Yeah, and actually, see, you've read through to my command line link because I have systemd commands on there. So point well taken, but I do have those in here for examples. So great stuff. Thanks for sharing that. So let's just show those. So I have 2 pages on here of this stuff here. Yeah. So here's some examples. To get the running status, you can use check config, turn on the service, sudo check config, service on. You just stop start with sudo service, get the current status, systemctl, the main utility used for managing services, and then we got more on the next slide here. Yes, right, yes. Here's the specific to the systemctl commands you can do to list and show all the available services, active services, and some example syntax there for you. Okay. Yeah, so we got that in there about the systemd. Yeah. Okay. Same thing for configuring firewall settings. So some of the things that we need to do to configure a system's firewall. So using relatively low-level tools from the command line and to edit various configuration files within the etc subdirectory tree. So for things like IP tables, the firewall, there's also graphical options that you can do. You can configure these with the GUFW and the YAST. And also, so the yellow arrow there is to highlight there again with all these things. When you're in your test, and if you're not familiar with these and you need a little help, help is right there at your fingertips. So in the case of a firewall, if that's not something that you do on a regular basis, you can get help right there from the command line. Okay. Likewise, so just a bunch of list of examples on routing traffic. So assign a source to a zone. So you can use the firewall command, make a permanent zone in there. List sources bound to a zone using the firewall command and adding a trusted zone in there. In both cases, if you leave out the dash dash permanent, then you only get the current runtime in there. And then finally at the bottom, some examples of how to add a service or port that you can do through the firewall command. Okay. And synchronize time, so pretty straightforward. Again, so we use the NTP daemon or a cron process, or you can manually update it in a startup script. So if you're asked on the exam how to do that, It's not a how do you do it, whatever method works best for you, whether you do it through an NTP daemon or manually update the startup script. It doesn't really matter as long as you accomplish that objective. And that's just a link out to the time servers, but I don't know that you would have access to that in the exam, though. I don't think so. Okay. And last couple parts here. So we have service configuration. Again, this is, this is where the list I was talking about. So these are the kind of the typical services. So DNS, FTP, NFS, SIFS, configure SSH, HTTP proxy, IMAP, IMAPS, HTTP server, server logs, restricting access to a web page, diagnose routine SE Linux and AppArmor policy violations. So that might be one to dive into. I didn't put anything in here, but that might be one you may not be as familiar with. And configuring a database server. So again, categorically, mental check note, you know, what are these things am I good at? Have I done before? Which of these areas do I need to focus on if I haven't done them as much? Okay. So just picked a couple of these out as examples for DNS and FTP. So, I mean, these are, again, not stuff that you would have as a question in the exam, but we all hopefully know what DNS is for name resolution. And where that file is located, it would be important if you had to make changes to it. So in the etc resolve conf file, okay. And again, common FTP clients that you may use or may be required, you know, the FTP, SFTP, NCFTP, and YAFC. And then also using the mount and unmount commands, which is something, again, I'm sure a lot of you are very familiar with. So you can mount a file system to a directory on a specific partition. And again, if you don't know the options, you can do mount --help to get help on that. And also for NFS and SIF. So again, some basic commands here to help you out. So sudo apt-get install nfs-common. Create a folder to mount the share. So sudo makedir and mount, and then insert the folder name. To mount the share, again, the sudo mount NFS IP address, and again, following that syntax. And likewise with the mounting for SIFs. So sudo mount-t SIFs. Commands. Okay, good old SSH. So setting our secure remote access shell. So actually, let's go to the commands. We have some samples here for you. So some simple stuff. If you need to find out who's logged in the console, well, you should know because you logged in. But otherwise, you can do the who am I works. Secure shell for the domain, whatever your domain name is .com. You can log in or log in as a different user. So you can do secure shell bob at whatever that domain is, or secure shell -l bob at whatever your domain is. And then likewise, you can use SCP for your copy files from one system to another. So you got to be familiar with those commands and know how to use them. And a lot of us probably use PuTTY or something similar to that, right, to make the connection. Okay. So this is a whopping 5% of the exam, so there's not a real, I don't think there's really a whole lot you're going to know. So categorically, what the exam says you need to do is A, access a VM console, configure systems to launch virtual machines at boot, evaluate memory usage of virtual machines, and resize RAM or storage of VMs. And that's really it. You can use KVM or Versh. Versh is a very popular command, and I put this in here also, so it's from the Ubuntu community site. So I didn't get the examples in here, but I did find these, and here's another one. This is at CentOS. So this is the CentOS documentation. And actually, for each distro at the end of the deck, I have a link to the online pages, so you can get to all these things for help. So again, you got the categories, the breakdown here. We're providing resources for you for both some sample commands and also additional resources to get you through them, okay? So on this one, again, I made this, this is really kind of more FYI overview stuff. It's not like you're going to be asked about these different things, so I'm gonna skip over that. Storage management, so we had some of these things that we've talked about before, but really it's about mounting volumes, changing, configuring them. Swapping space, which we talked about. You might have to do some RAID configuration and understand the process to do that. mounting standard encrypted in network systems. We talked about permissions, ACLs, and quotas. So these are all things related to volume management in the in exam. And if you get the 201, there's actually a whole chapter on there that, that gives a breakdown of that. But we've covered quite a few of those already. On the ACLs, that's on my extra notes. So I have lots of samples on how to set the ACLs if you haven't done that. As like I said, we're only at slide 54 and there's 40 more, about 30 or 40 more hidden. So I got a lot of resources for you. Managing partitions. So again, pretty straightforward stuff. You need to know how to list, create, delete, modify, do encrypted partitions, adding new partitions and volumes. Know the basic utilities, pick your flavor, whatever you like to use. FDisk, very old, been around forever. Know the options, know the switches in case you have to do something you're not familiar with. All right, so just a little, just keep you interactive and awake here after the lunch sets in. A little interactive quiz here. So how many primary partitions can you have?
Four.
Four, right. How many extended partitions can you have? One. Isn't that funny how it's the same way in Windows?
What?
Right. Yeah, right, yeah, exactly. Why do we partition? Why would we do it? Why would you need to? Yeah, you want to separate stuff, organize it, separation, security. Maybe you want to do increased performance. Same reason why when you build a brand new VM in Azure, what you get by default is no SDisk and a temp, and you want anything else, you add a disk to it, right? Because you don't want all that stuff on your OS disk. Wouldn't be good. All right, so here's a little syntax and see if you understand this. So I have /dev/sdb1. What's the partition number and the disk number? What does that mean?
Disk 2, partition 1.
So first partition on the second disk is correct. Next one, what's the partition number and the disk number for dev/sdc4? There you go. Fourth partition on the third disk. So again, for you guys, it may be obvious, but again, someone who's newer or doesn't do this a lot, understand the syntax of how that works with the ABCs and the numerical number. But you can see that it's pretty straightforward, but you just need to know that if they ask you to do that. And then what command will show you the current available disk device nodes? Very simple command, very short command. You can actually do ls-l/dev. Way to do that. One way to do it. Sorry?
VF?
Oh, DF. I'm not sure on that one. Anyone else know for sure? Think so? Okay, very good. DF1 unless it's mounted, he said. Very good. All right, use an encrypted partition. The Linux Unified Key Setup provides block device level encryption. So again, there's a crypt setup utility. If you haven't used that, get familiar with that and know the options how to do that. I have some samples in here of how to use an encrypted partition. And actually got a very specific section in, again, the 201 help. Also, some of these things, keep in mind also the Pluralsight. If you want to go much deeper in a particular topic, they'll dive in these for hours, literally. So crypt setup for the Lux format, verbose options with it, for the extended 4, mounting the drives, unmounting, and then also more switches on the crypt setup. So again, if it's something you haven't done before, you want to take a look at it, play around with it, and be able to do that live on a machine. That's what's important for this exam. Okay. All right. So what's the utility for if I want to do striping of disks? What utility do I use? Anyone do that lately?
My RAID controller.
Your RAID controller. Okay. So what was that one you said?
BTRFs.
BTRFs can do it, and also MDADM. Again, so whatever works for you, that works in your distro, you can use that. You can use MDADM. And here I just kind of broke down the steps to configure a software RAID. Again, you wouldn't be asked it, but I need to format it. I create the RAID device. I add the device to the correct location. I mount it, and then I capture the details. And guess what? Click again, and there's the example syntax walking you through it. Okay, just trying to provide you resources. So speaking of resources, here's some more. So at the end here, we have stuff that I've put together. So here's the distro-specific manuals for each of these. So for CentOS, OpenSUSE, and Ubuntu. Here's the exam objectives, which is essentially how I've broken down the slide deck for you. There's lots of stuff out here. There's actually, I found 100 Linux tutorials on YouTube. If you can't sleep at night and you want to watch someone just clickety-click, knock you right out. It's better than Somonex. There's EDX. I don't know if you guys know about EDX, but it's really good. I've actually done Azure certification training we've done at X. They actually record them up in Redmond. It's some good stuff they go through. But again, it's more time consuming. So really find what you need and then pick that thing. There's Learn the Shell, the Linux New User Guides I found, Text Editing 101, Unix Fundamentals, the Linux Documentation. I mean, there's gobs of stuff out there. A lot of links I have go to different ones. I found the one I thought was pretty nicely done that I have linked. I think it was called Linux Minute. I don't know if you guys have seen that. But the guy lays his pages out very nicely, explains it all, goes through samples. So in some of the links I have throughout, they're from Linux Minute. I really like that one, the way it was set up. Okay, so I thank you all for being here. So again, what we did here is we went through the exam objectives, broke it down, gave you some examples. I have more hidden slides. So again, I'm only at 61, and there's a total of 94 slides. So there's a lot more stuff in here for you to use and leverage. But basically give you a lay of the land, because this exam works entirely different than the typical Microsoft certification exams, if you've done those. And again, hats off to them. I mean, no joke there, Red Hat. But it's that it's actually hands-on physical, getting in there and just crunching away. I think that's the way more exams should be versus all this question answer stuff you can look up. So we gave you what you need to know to pass, how to set up. It's really a fundamental exam. This is the entry level. And if you take this plus the 70-533, which that's the other thing. Oh, I said update this for Ignite. I think I didn't do that. But I do have the 70-533. There was only one other relevant session in here, so ignore those things. I'll change that as well. The other relevant session is coming up right after this. It's OSS and Microsoft Loves Linux. So just search for OSS in the session guide. Should be good stuff. Oh, but I did have the external resources. LinuxAcademy.com is really good. YouTube and also Udemy has a Linux for Beginners session. So that's it, folks. I'm out of slides. Again, lots more here. I will go and post this within the hour. And so go to my blog, and it will be, it's right at the top level. So ak.ms/MarkGrimes is a quick way to get to it and the resources. So I hope you enjoy the rest of your Ignite here. Thanks for coming, and thanks for being part of my session. If you get a chance, please fill out an eval. Appreciate it.